And City Council for Tuesday, April 18th. Deputy Mayor Peltier is not with us tonight. He's under the weather. The rest of the council is present. Are there any modifications to the agenda? Motion to approve?
So moved.
All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Agenda is accepted. Are there any conflicts of interest to disclose?
I don't think it's a conflict, but I will disclose that on the cannabis topic that I've provided legal representation to Paper and Leaf Store.
We'll move on to public comment. This being a study session, we only take public comment on items that are on the agenda. You can comment at this time if you like, or you can wait until we... Oh, yes, we're going to do public comment, and then we're going to do poetry. We will not forget our poets. So take public comment. If anyone would like to comment at this time, they can, or you can comment when we get to that item on the agenda. You only get one bite at the apple. Yes, sir.
So I believe I'm third on the sign-up list, but I guess the other two want to speak later. Peter Harris, 14037 Farmview Lane. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. I am the president of Squeaky Wheels, a cycling advocacy organization on the island, and the board has asked me to present to you a position on the non-motorized transportation infrastructure ballot measure that you will be discussing. I emailed a copy of the position statement earlier today, and I have paper copies here for anyone who might need one. In a nutshell, Squeaky Wheels supports a Bainbridge Island ballot measure to fund improvements in cycling infrastructure, and we support such a measure this year. Second, we suggest the city consider a ballot measure for a levy lid lift rather than for voted debt. And third, we would discourage a ballot measure combining voted debt for non-motorized transportation infrastructure with voted debt for a town square project. We seek improvements in cycling infrastructure, especially road shoulder improvements that will make cycling safer. The city is making this kind of improvements now at a slow pace as funding allows. We would like to see a faster pace. We believe it would be wise for the city to consider a ballot measure for a levy lid lift rather than a measure for unlimited tax general obligation bonds known as voted debt. Levy lid lift may work better in a couple of ways. Cycling and other non-motorized infrastructure improvements are not a single project, but rather a set of projects. They could be coordinated, they should be coordinated for connectivity, but need not be planned and executed all at once. We would discourage a ballot measure combining voted debt for non-motorized infrastructure, transportation infrastructure, with voted debt for a town square project involving a parking garage. First, because this would delay the non-motorized improvements while the city elaborates the town square project. And second, combining two purposes in one measure may create policy conflicts for many voters, as well as creating a more expensive measure. Some have argued that the combination of purposes would increase the chances that such a measure would pass. We believe islanders will support non-motorized improvements in themselves. There's support for this in a survey conducted for the city several years ago, in which three-quarters of island residents said non-motorized transportation improvements are very important or essential. These positions that I'm presenting you tonight all flow from Squeaky Wheels' fundamental goal, which is to provide more safety for more cyclists as soon as possible. Thank you again.
Thank you. Anyone else like to come in at this time? Hearing none, this is National Poetry Month, and we're honored to have a couple poets with us tonight to share their poetry with us. If you would please come up and introduce yourself and honor us with your poem.
I'm Lisa Giles, and I started writing poetry last year, and I submitted this poem to the Arts and Humanities Council competition, and they selected it. So it's called Summer. Late meeting after dark. At home in the valley, I hear the low drone of David's motorcycle as he turns down the hill a quarter mile away. Then, silence. Waiting, wondering, listening, a long time. 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Finally, he arrives, walking slowly, carefully, face white, blood on jeans and shirt, broken helmet, not wearing protective padded motorcycle clothes. A yearling buck T-boned me.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Sue Hyland, and very honored to be here and celebrating Poetry Month. I began writing, as a young child, but when I moved to Bainbridge and had two young daughters, the Thursday Bainbridge Island Writers Workshop with Bob McAllister and Nancy Rico was my salvation at that time, with a 1 and 3-year-old. And since then, I've just really enjoyed Poetry Corners for so many years and want to personally thank the Bainbridge Island Arts and Humanities Council staff for their work, for providing Poetry Corners year after year. It is a lot of work, and it's wonderful. And I'm very proud that Bainbridge Island supports poetry this month. I'd also like to thank Roger Fredrickson, owner and manager of Millstream, who has my poem up on display. And I'm dedicating my poem tonight to two poet friends of mine who have given so much to this community and to many years at Bainbridge High School. To Everett Thompson, whom I shared my more recent attendance at the Bainbridge Writers Workshop at his home with his wife and workshop leader Nancy Rico. And to Bob McAllister, who I first met in the spring of 1985 at Peggy Julian's home, where he and Nancy Rico were hosting the Bainbridge Writers Workshop, where I began to write poetry again with great encouragement and helpful advice for over 20 years. I would not be here today without that. My Poetry Corners for 2017 is called When I Can't Find the Title. I go outside to memorize Scotch broom and fir, where my toes can stretch in the wet grass, where my back spasms, shaking off winter like a wet dog. In this moment, when another friend dies, I begin to squeeze my unwritten poems inside my fist to throw them over the backyard shed for the swallows to catch. Thank you so much.
Thank you both very much. Now move on to item 5A on our agenda, which is a discussion of a work plan for implementing actions taken from the comprehensive plan.
Good evening, Council. Christine, can you put that on full screen for me? You have in your packet a document that I'm going to walk us through tonight. This item continues the discussion we started last month around organizing a work plan for the implementing actions that you identified as part of the comprehensive plan update. Hopefully you'll remember that we took a first cut at organizing these according to some content clusters, and I'm always open to ideas about better terminology for this, but using that cluster approach, I wanted to take some of the feedback from our first discussion and bring you a version tonight that we will walk through that will help you see hopefully some timing and priority and dependencies in more detail. And my suggestion is that we just go through these and we can spend less or more time on each as we get into it. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Gary is here as well and can talk to some of the specifics of tasks that maybe you are not as familiar with. So I'd like to start with cluster number one, which has to do with work related to the code consistency and process improvement around our planning and community development functions generally. I don't know if it's easier to see on the screen or in your packet materials, but what we have done here is grouped four sort of areas of work and put these roughly in order of timing. Area A has to do with the tasks that were identified are the two that you see there. Identify the land use code processes that can be enhanced and create more effective and efficient review processes. And of course, our intention is to receive the results of the Lattimore study, and we believe those will be very related to this and will give us some specific guidance on what tasks the department wants to take up, and we will be talking with you about that. So that work is ongoing now. You'll see to the right, we've indicated responsibility / resources, so who might lead this effort and when it would happen. And so in this case, we've identified that we're starting that now in the second quarter of 2017, and that we expect it will be work that we can complete by the first quarter of next year. So more to come there. Stay tuned. Area B is what would happen next. And the task, as described, is to complete a consistency review of all of the code based on the comp plan update. The city manager and the planning department director have been talking about this, and there are different ways to approach it. A sort of straightforward consistency analysis would be kind of a methodical, go through the code as it exists today and pencil out the changes that are needed, take them through the required public engagement and planning commission and council process. A more robust but perhaps interesting approach might be to really start from a baseline of taking a start from scratch look at the code. And I think that's something that at least one of the council members has talked about previously. I don't know if Doug or Gary, you want to give that a little more meat, but it would be a broader, harder task. But at the end, we would have a code that rather than continuing to be sort of patched and tied together would have really just started over in some ways. So I don't know, Gary, if you have a different way to describe that.
You know, I think as we begin to analyze the municipal code, and its relationship with the comprehensive plan, one of the things we need to ask ourselves is, are there going to be just tweaks and amendments that are going to suffice, or do we really need to step back and look at some wholesale changes? Case in point is the vegetative management chapter, where we've had some discussions with the tree LID committee recently, and we've talked about, do we try to fix it or do we really just come up with a new chapter? So that's going to be part of our assessment going forward, is do we do a little or do we do a lot?
Question on that topic. Can't that be done subject matter area by subject matter area? We don't need to talk about the entire code. You're talking about land use, obviously.
Right.
And within land use, there are subject matter areas. So trees, for instance, it may make sense. It may be most efficient and most productive to start from scratch with that one subject matter area, but not throughout the whole land use code.
Right. It may be that we look at like chapter 2, which is more process related, and then chapter 18, which is zoning. I would expect very little change at all with subdivision, perhaps the environment. We're now going through a critical areas update, so that should, for the most part, take care of itself. So I think it is more narrowly defined rather than really broad-based.
So that's something for council to kind of consider and be aware of, and I assume, Gary, maybe as part of the discussion following the Lattimore report, we can talk some more about scope and how aggressive that you would recommend we be in that. Does that sound right? Okay. Okay, and then looking at Area C is addressing the request to update the sub-area plans. There are four of them, and we've suggested an order and some timing, but tonight is the night to hear from you as well on that. You'll see that we've listed Island Center first, and with a proposal to start that at the beginning of 2018, and then to follow with Rolling Bay, not Rolling Bar. I've been listening to too many Gold Bar stories on the radio. And then that would be a 2019 task. And then looking ahead, we expect we could pick up Sportsman's Triangle and Day Road after that. So these are some rough senses of timing. We're particularly interested in council's feedback on that order, that set of priorities. Do you have any guidance or reaction to that to share?
At least from my standpoint, I think the order is right, but I'm interested in why we have to wait until January of next year to start with Highland Center.
Well, I think the city manager and Gary may provide some additional feedback. I think between the critical areas ordinance and perhaps some of the work on Lattimore and the consistency review, in order to do more than that, we'd have to think about A, whether we could find external resources and whether they would really fit with those tasks. There are things that we can get other people to help with, and there are things that really only department staff can do. So,
I just was going to say, too, that I would like to start Island Center sooner, especially if there's a plan already that was started previously we can just pick up on.
That's part of the discussion we had at the staff level is, you know, how quick can we get that started? And one of the assumptions we made that, you know, certainly like council input on is, you know, trying to avoid starting anything over the summer months when people are on vacation, because it is a, you know, process that we want a lot of community engagement. So that's one of the factors that kind of pushes it out. So we're thinking we can use the summer months to scope the project, identify consulting needs, and potentially get someone on board, and then actually get things kicked off later in the year.
Yeah, I would also add that the municipal code has a very prescriptive process for doing sub-area plans. The planning director is to form kind of an interdisciplinary team composed of various departments within the city. And it's up to the council to appoint and convene a citizens committee, which would be no more than 9 members. So there is some kind of procedures and processes that we need to follow, which are prescribed in the municipal code. The last plan, or the Island Center plan, there was one that was a committee formed and work done back in 2001. So part of our trying to scope that sub-area plan would be to look at what's been done, identify if the issues are still somewhat the same or if they're different, and of course weigh that against the recently adopted comprehensive plan and its policies.
So I think we heard clearly that you'd like to start as soon as possible, ideally before the turn of the year, and we'll do some work and see how that can happen.
If it has to be pushed off till the end of summer, I think it'd be a good idea to at least try to get the committee established when we're doing interviews in June, right, for everything else?
Yeah, well, the interviews will actually take place in May, and the advertising is already out, so we're going to have to re-advertise for this and collect new volunteers.
And I think there's maybe a bit of a difference between the committee that is called for in the sub-area plan and the advisory committees, which in many cases have multi-year appointments, but we can look at it. So thank you for that, and it sounds as if there's support for the list as it's shown to do Rolling Bay next. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, just I'm not sure if it's in this context, but I want to raise it as we're talking about the code updates that we've talked about the Northern Day Road Business District. Mm-hmm. That it makes sense to me. Just to reiterate, I really like the cluster approach, and it's a helpful way to think about this. But it makes sense to me that we would roll that discussion into these priorities.
I think we will be tracking that as part of the department's work plan. I do want to kind of maintain some clarity here that these are items that were identified in the comp plan update as implementing actions, but we will certainly continue to report out to you, and I think Gary has provided some information today on how the department intends to pick up the conversation about business industrial So, okay, and then just the last line within Area C, there was an item capturing the need to update standards and guidelines for the neighborhood centers, and that will come through the subarea planning process. So that's why you see it shown here as well. And then Area D was to capture what's really a standalone task. I tried very hard to associate it with some of this other work, and it really was persuaded by the city manager and Gary that it stands by itself and is important and potentially has results that will affect multiple areas of our code, and that's the request to evaluate the city's PDR and TDR programs. So again, it needs to be on a work plan, and we need to make sure we have the resources organized to accomplish the work. It's shown here as a start for 2018, but we're going to continue, you know, based on the feedback tonight, to refine this and bring it back to you. So any other questions on that first set of work? Okay, the next page is the set of tasks associated with affordable housing. So cluster two, thank you, Gary. And the first task is really the one that's up at the top there, and that's to create the short-term affordable housing task force. We've talked with you about that previously and asked you to bear with us while we finish some other work before that was launched. So we have that starting in Q3. Again, to echo the comment Doug made, we would want to make sure we're including folks in that when they're here and summer vacation is not so much of an issue. So that will be the first step, and we expect to have them with us. I know that the mayor has talked previously about this being kind of a targeted, perhaps 90-day effort, but we think that the folks on that task force are likely to be doing their work for a bit longer than that. And then all of the questions or issues shown below that are areas where we expect the task force will take a look, do some learning, give some guidance and suggestions and policy recommendations to the council. And so those all are shown as things where we will know what it is that needs doing once the task force has had a chance to dig in and complete their work. Are there questions about that?
Of all the areas that are presented in this presentation, this is the one that I had the most concern about. I perceive a much greater sense of urgency to addressing affordable housing than this timeline would give us. And starting with task one, I mean, it seems to me that the task force could be created in the third quarter of this year and could complete its task of setting goals by the end of the year, I hope. And then that might drive a faster process that would get us to some progress by the end of 2018, certainly before Q4 2019. That just seems too drawn out to me.
And I think I want to highlight there that the completion Q4 2019 was intended to encompass all of the Planning Commission and code change work that would implement the policy recommendations that are captured there. So that would be the implementation part, but I hear the sense of urgency, and it does reflect previous direction the council has given us on that. So,
yeah, I think it's important to keep in mind the what we're asking, or what we're going to ask a task force to do, and then the work that's going to have to come after that to implement whatever we decide to do. I'd like to also take this opportunity to make a pitch for the fact that there is a group of high school students called the Mayor's Youth Advisory Council, which has been working on an affordable housing project, and will be coming to council on May 16th to make a presentation that will kind of be a preview of what we might hope to hear from a task force.
I agree with everything Mike said. I think that we need to move faster on this. Some of these things may take longer, like the Marina Live Aboard capacity. But I think, you know, had we had an opportunity during the comp plan process, which we unfortunately didn't, we weren't really given the time to take on something like this, I would have proposed that we increase the density in our core and require affordable housing. And I don't know that we need a task force, maybe to determine like the details, but I think something, to me, that's kind of a simple concept. It's not simple maybe to get on paper, but I don't know when I look at all these other things, I don't really know that any of these are going to do anything for affordable housing, make that much of a difference. I think we need to do something. I think Seattle's doing it now. I think we should talk about increasing our density and requiring it and doing it fast. All the development is happening now.
Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that you know that we hear that sense of urgency. And part of what we're trying to do tonight is balance where you have the highest priorities and where we need to supplement our existing resources if we want to do things faster and come back to you with those ideas. So
I think we should all keep in mind that we don't need to necessarily allow this process to stand in the way of specific good ideas that might be kind of put down on paper and implemented sooner. So
I guess I hope that is correct. My concern is that in past years, things come up in the middle of the year and the response is, well, that's not on the work plan. We can't do it. We don't have staff capacity because it's not on the work plan. We didn't plan for it.
The one comment I want to make, not just for the affordable housing cluster, but for all of this work, these are estimated start and completion dates. We've tried to plan for a lot of process, which we find is important on a lot of the things we do. So, and that's kind of hard to predict how long that's going to take. So if we happen to move quicker than what we had anticipated here, we can certainly accelerate the next steps.
Mayor, I agree with what Sarah's saying, and I hear you saying two things, Sarah. One is, can we just move this along quicker? Do we have to have a committee that takes a year to get its work done? But what you're also saying is, can we just talk about one of the ideas now without having to wait for a committee to come back and tell us about it? And as for that second point, I would fully support talking about what you just suggested without having to wait for the committee to come back and tell us about it. So I just want to say, I guess there are two of us that would be happy to start that discussion without waiting for the committee.
I'm in support as well.
I think the question is how to go about it. We have desires, but we're not experts in the details. And so I think that if the two of you wanted to get together and outline as specific as an amateur can the goals to be accomplished, maybe that would be something that could come back to council and might form the basis for a specific direction to the staff that could be implemented.
Okay, thank you. Any more discussion on this cluster? Okay, great. The third grouping is the tasks that are associated with sustainability and water resources, and there are many. This is a couple of pages just to make sure you're looking at the complete list. Area A is the work to complete the critical areas ordinance, which is underway and is launched. And so unless you have questions about that, we think that getting that done as early in Q3 as possible will address both of those items. Area B is to review the vegetation management and other tree regulations. That is also in progress through the work of the ad hoc committee that's already been focused on this for a year or more. And the thinking is that that work will complete by the end of the year. Then Area C is to essentially take all of the thinking and policy ideas about LID, sustainability, green building codes, climate change, and some related ideas, and make sure that we are following through and implementing the policies that council decides to move forward with. So those are shown here just to capture the list. But that is work that is already launched in a lot of ways. Area D is more specific on the next page to water resources.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Just on those last, the top three under Area C, and maybe there's no point for me to make this comment, but I think I understand why they're here, but they also feel like items that would fall under just the general review of the land use code to ensure consistency with the comp plan. I mean, would you agree with that? And I'm kind of looking at Gary. I mean, is this part of that same work plan, or are these really different things?
Well, I think that there are some things that are above and beyond. For instance, consider development of a conservation village regulation. So that's not something that exists, but something that would need to be developed. So some of these policy directives require little effort, and others will require more kind of programmatic work. So we have a bit of both.
And I think the goal in putting them together on this page was to make sure that where concepts do have connections and dependencies, that we're reminded of that, so that they're not living kind of off in the consistency silo, if that helps at all.
I think it makes sense to have them here. I was just thinking, especially those top three, that you know maybe they're also just being done as part of the consistency review. I don't need to talk about it more. I just wanted to bring that up.
Okay, and then moving on to the fourth area, Area D, as I said, is a little more clearly focused on water resources. The sort of what we see as the first step would be to adopt an island-wide groundwater management plan, and it would ideally articulate and encompass things like adaptive management and aquifer conservation regulations. And then you've also asked that we look into considering seawater intrusion regulations. And then I highlighted what, according to kind of the thinking when the implementing actions were built, is to prepare a climate change strategy and water conservation plan. But of course, council is already in the process of thinking about a climate change action committee. And so I kind of highlight this as pointing out, you know, wanting to make sure that we're organized and we're doing whatever needs to happen first, and then thinking about if that committee is going to come to life now, which of the things here in this list will they be pointed towards, and what goals do you have for that group that are on this page or are need to be articulated separately. So, okay, and then...
I'm sorry, one comment about that.
Yeah.
The first item there, adopt an island-wide groundwater management plan. Correct me, council, if I'm wrong, and I could be, but as we were going through the comp plan and finishing up the revision of that, we kind of punted a number of things over to ETAC. Wasn't coming back to us with some sort of recommendation or thinking about a groundwater management plan part of what we sent to ETAC?
Beats me.
Yeah, I think it got lost in the pipeline. I don't believe it's on the agenda in this. We have a meeting this week. I'll bring it up and see where we are. But I recall we had this discussion, but I don't recall it ever formally was assigned or picked up. But let me...
I think the council had a couple requests coming out of the comp plan update for ETAC, and maybe one of these folks can help answer.
I think what we understand is one of the things that ETAC was tasked with was to evaluate the water quality and flow monitoring program, as well as Appendix B to the water resources element, which was the existing conditions. So there was an Appendix B report that was existing conditions, but not the groundwater management plan.
And that's what happened.
And I could be wrong in the groundwater management. But also, though, on that list, I thought we had asked, well, I'm certain that we had asked the ETAC to take a look at all the studies that had been done and come back to us with some recommendations on what further work should be done around groundwater studies. We have money in the budget for that, so we asked them to come back to us with a recommendation. So I take it that's not on their work plan?
I don't want to say that definitively. One of the things that I've tried to do this year is when council has a request to an advisory committee, that we've captured that. I don't have it with me because I think there is sometimes the opportunity to get lost, you know, the request and whether there was follow-up. So unfortunately, I don't have that document handy, but I do remember that there were requests to ETAC.
Can you get back to us on that? My recollection is the same, and it would... You know, we'd like to make sure that that hasn't fallen through the cracks.
Yeah, I will send you all of the requests. That there were not many. They mostly came out of the council's retreat in January, and make sure that we're synced up on that. Okay, and then moving on to Area E is really just to capture some tasks related to public outreach and public education. And then Area F similarly just organizes the ones, the plans that council identified for coordination with other agencies and jurisdictions. So hopefully this approach makes sense just as a way to kind of capture the set of work. And we will also be using this framework to report back to you and to communicate with folks about what we wanted to see happen and whether it has or not. So any other questions on that cluster? Okay, the rest of these are in some ways a little less... less thick. Cluster 4, economic development. There were more than one item related to looking at available parking, specifically in Winslow. So those are grouped together under Area A. There is a task force in progress, and so the work that they're doing will help to inform next steps on those three tasks that you see listed there. So hopefully that makes sense. Area B is the set of work around adopting an economic development strategy, and that's not something that we anticipate working on this year, so we've identified that as a 2018 project. It would, of course, be taken up with a lot of partnership and collaboration with groups outside the city. And then C is work to update the Winslow Mixed-Use Town Center Master Plan. As part of that, I think you would naturally answer what capital projects and streetscape standards make sense for Winslow in light of that update. And then you also had a task to review and update the Linwood Center subarea plan. And because of its kind of economic development touch, we've captured that here. It could probably go in the land use area as well, but we wanted to kind of recognize the economic development focus, and so we have it placed here. And right now we have that targeted as a 2019 task simply because the other subarea plans should probably come first if that's the priority, as I understand your preferences. So, okay. Anything on economic development that you'd like to talk more about? Okay, transportation is pretty straightforward. On the next page, Cluster 5, you are already, as a council, talking about a geobond for transportation infrastructure, and bike lanes connecting Winslow and the service centers are the opportunity there will be to identify projects and place them in the CIP, and then the city will work to implement those based on timing and funding. And then the next one, implement capital priorities through the CIP, is really just articulating a best practice. That's how we organize our capital planning now. So I want to have it here because it was something that came out of the comp plan update, but it's not a change. It's not new work for us. It's really just a concept. And then coordinate city capital plans with other jurisdictions, and our public works team does that and will continue to do that to the best of their ability. Cluster 6 is about utility planning tasks. The first area is to develop a process for periodic review of island utility services. Our thinking here is that we would work with you to establish a city policy about how that happens and what timing. We'd then adopt that policy and then live by it, similar to sort of thinking about our system plan should be updated at X frequency. And if we have that in our financial policies, then we not only help build the institutional memory that that's the way we want to operate, but then when we go into budget cycles, we can help ourselves see, oh, in this biennium, we need to plan for that system plan update or what have you. In Area B, facilitate cooperation or consolidation of water systems and proactively encourage consolidation of water systems. Those are obviously very similar tasks. And again, the foundation to do that and to see how we'll move that needle would be to work with you on a policy that articulates that and really makes real what the city's goals and objectives are with respect to that concept.
And just let me interject here that both under Area A and Area B here, those are items that are on the UAC's work plan. And there was some question as to what role that the committee is bouncing back and forth about how to actually deal with that. But both of those issues are part of what UAC is talking about to make a recommendation on this.
Okay, good. That's helpful. C is two other utility-related tasks. One is to investigate the creation of an island-wide high-speed internet service. We have some previous work on that. If you'd like, council can revisit that and see if there is new energy that you'd like us to deploy in 2018 around that. And then the other one, support sewer tertiary treatment and gray water systems. That's a pretty significant concept that would require some major capital work and code changes. We've placed it in 2019, not because we don't respect the interest, but because we have a lot of other things planned for the remainder of 17 and 18. But it's here on the list, and if there's more that you want to do on that sooner, we can talk with you about that and about what would be needed to make that happen. And then the last one is in Area D, during land use code review, identify changes for utilities. And so we expect that will happen by virtue of the land use update. Any questions about the utility items that you've identified? Okay, and I think we're in the home stretch here. Cluster number 7 is about human services, and the two actions that were identified were to first consider human service funding within the annual city budget, and to update the community needs assessment periodically. I think I mentioned this last time. The suggestion here is that, again, we work with you to develop and adopt a policy that would go into our financial policies that would state that and state the city's commitment to do that, and would identify a frequency at which the city has an interest in seeing the community needs assessment updated. The recommendation from the update we did last year was to aim to do that every 4 years. So again, if we formalize that into a policy, then that's a way for us as an organization to know that that's our policy and to plan for it in terms of both workload and budget. So that would be my suggestion for how we proceed with this, and then it should become more of a natural habit for the organization to live by that guideline. So that was all we intended to do with this tonight. It was helpful to hear where you have real interest in emphasizing speed and resources. It is good that none of those were surprising. That is where we previously understood you to have the greatest sense of urgency, and we'll take this one step further and try and figure out how to make those things happen sooner than what's shown here. And also see about additional resources, because it may be that in some cases we need to start to work with you on budget and work plan to bring some additional people and other sets of resources to help move this faster.
So we didn't have any feedback at all on the human services, and maybe some others this applies to too, but since we didn't say anything, what can we expect to happen with regard to a proposed policy with regard to human services funding? Would it normally float to the surface quarter two next year? And
I'll just use this one as an example, and maybe when we talk next time, I'll make sure we get real specific about others so that you know what to expect. But for this one, exactly so. My suggestion would be that in Q1 next year, 2018, will be our budget development year, and so one of the very early steps of that process is to review the financial policies with you. So that would happen in the middle-ish of Q2. So what I would suggest doing is in Q1 have a financial policy change like this and whatever others so that we could batch them and make use of your attention and say, these are changes to the financial policies we'd like to put in this year. Go ahead and put those in. And then those would be used as part of budget development, you know, as essentially a checklist of things that are due or not due in the upcoming 2 years. Is that helpful?
Okay. Any other questions, comments from council? Is there any public comment on this topic? Hearing none.
Patty Drzbobic, at Holly Farm Lane. I'm very concerned about any of the development that goes on in the Fletcher Bay area. Less than a month ago, there were three water specialists that stood in front of you and spoke about the decrease in water that was 20% from that water aquifer. That water is being pumped into the city. So what you are doing when you're overdeveloping, as is occurring here, is that you are jeopardizing all of our private wells that are in that area. And I'm very concerned about the lack of concern by the city, by the council, for development. Because when you put 160 units on 4.5 acres, you're jeopardizing the water for the entire island, not just for Fletcher Bay, for the entire island. And when a good share of that water is being pumped into the city, and then you try to control those of us that are outside of the city, that's very problematic. And you're jeopardizing the farms, you're jeopardizing all of our private wells, for the advantage that you want to overconstruct and overbuild in the city area.
Thank you. Any other public comment on the work plan for implementing the comprehensive plan? Gary?
One thing that you'll note that's not on the work program that I know is of interest to the City Council is what's the status of the business industrial zoning district. So let me just take a minute to kind of summarize kind of where we are and what the next steps are. Based on what we heard during the Navigate Bainbridge Comprehensive Planning update, we also had a community meeting at the SAGE facility, and Council has had ongoing discussions over the last several months about what are the kinds of uses that we should be allowing in the business industrial zone. And so staff has been giving that some thought. And our proposal is to put together some concepts and ideas and kind of summarize what it is that we've heard over the last several months and put together a list of permitted uses and conditional uses in kind of table format that we then could host another community meeting, reach back out to those business owners, property owners, and the community at large with some ideas and some thoughts about where we could take this, get some kind of feedback from them, whether we are including enough uses or not enough uses, or some should be restricted or some should be allowed, and try to then formulate a proposal that we then could take to or before the Planning Commission in a study session format. From that would evolve then a proposed code in which we would hold a public hearing and then forward a recommendation on to City Council for your review and action. Our timeline is that we'd like to be able to, about mid-month next month, mid-May, host this kind of town hall format here through a public engagement and outreach program, do a press release, try to get kind of some of the same folks back that have shown interest, have that ongoing discussion again. And then based on those discussions, be able to formulate a proposal that we then could take to the Planning Commission. It would probably be sometime late June, early July before the Planning Commission would complete its work, a study session, a public hearing, and then prepare to forward a recommendation to you for your consideration. So that's the general approach going forward.
Sure. Why is this jumping ahead of Island Center?
I'm sorry?
Why is Day Road jumping ahead of Island Center?
Well, this has been some unfinished business that it's been my understanding that the council has been interested in, and certainly the Planning Commission is in trying to resolve some of these outstanding issues. They're ongoing.
And I guess what I thought came out of the moratorium was that there wasn't a lot of concern among the property owners and businesses and on the council that people were pretty satisfied with how it was working. And so I don't understand why this level of effort is going into this and doing it so quickly, but we can't even get Island Center off the ground until next year.
So we had a meeting at SAGE, and it was very well attended. And the people that attended the meeting, you were there. So they weren't satisfied, as I read it. And so I think that we felt, at least I felt, an obligation to follow up, and I don't think it's either or. I don't think that this is diverting work on Island Center, but I think this is something we started working on and we want to finish it.
Maybe satisfied is the wrong word. I think some of the changes they want to make are the kind of things you would contemplate during a sub-area plan. And I do think that one pushes the other out. This takes time. It takes staff time. We're being told we can't start Island Center, which has been waiting for years and years and years, until next year because there's not capacity to take it on. But this jumps ahead of that neighborhood that's been waiting and waiting, and promises have been made, and I don't understand. I just don't understand.
Any other council comment, questions on this?
I'm just curious, Gary. I haven't been through a sub-area planning process. I assumed it was something that was much more comprehensive than the discussion we've been having around the Day Road. Is it? Or is Sarah right? Would this kind of necessitate a sub-area plan for the process?
Would the business industrial zoning necessitate a sub-area planning process? No, I don't think so. I think that it's more looking at the uses, whether they're conditional uses or permitted uses, and looking at kind of the categories, whether they're education, whether they're health, and just evaluating, are those the kinds of uses that we want in the business industrial zone? I will say that it was my sense that after the SAGE facility meeting that there was an expectation that we would have some follow-up by those that were in attendance. There seemed to be a lot of eagerness to work with staff on refining the list of uses, whether they're conditional uses or permitted uses within those two zones within the city.
I think they're looking to expand their uses, and I just need someone to explain to me why there's staff available to hold these meetings and make these changes for Day Road, and there's not staff available to start up the Island Center sub-area plan.
Well, it's all a matter of working with what resources we have. Certainly, there's a long list of things that we'd like to do. This was looking at the business industrial zone was a project that we just wanted to finish before we embarked on another work program project.
I'd like to say that I think from our earlier discussion that it was fairly clear that starting the Island Center process is a priority for a council, and that, although I understand waiting until perhaps after the summer to get the community involved might make sense, that we don't want to wait until next year to get started. And I think that message got through. Yeah.
My understanding, having attended the SAGE meeting as well, one of the principal issues of discussion was whether or not to continue the moratorium. And so many of the comments had to do with the uncertainty of property owners who have space for lease and can't recruit tenants. There are a number of issues having to do with the moratorium itself. I came away, and I guess I have to look at the transcript, I came away from that meeting where we voted to end the moratorium that we, if not formally, made a pledge to address this issue as soon as possible. So this meets my expectation, and I would hope not to. I agree that very much about the Island Center priority and hadn't tried to put one against the other in terms of staff allocation, but this meets what I was expecting from the meeting where we ended the moratorium. So that's where I am on this.
Well, I think the pledge has been made just as many times to Island Center and for much longer of a period of time. And I'd like to remind everyone that during our comprehensive plan process, there were a lot of engaged people from Island Center that wanted to get started, just as much as Day Road. And I do think this is bumping Island Center, and I don't think that should happen.
I'm surprised by your reaction, Sarah. I actually thought, I mean, the whole purpose of the moratorium is that there's an urgency. So I guess your point is, well, once there's no moratorium, then the difference between what we have now and what we might get at the end of the process is not significant enough to prioritize it. But the very idea of putting it as a moratorium, to me, inherent in that is that it's an urgent matter.
So the reasons I thought it was urgent, I was kind of out in left field on my own. So to me, it's not urgent anymore because what I thought was a problem is not going to go anywhere. The things that I thought needed to be addressed aren't going to be addressed. And so that's why it's no longer urgent to me.
I came out of that process thinking that we had it was urgent.
So my thought on this is that we can move forward with the business industrial zoning issue and potentially have that completed before the end of summer and start the process for the subarea plan when everyone's back after the summer and can be engaged. I think we can get that process rolling in the third quarter.
I will just say again, I think you have as many people in the Island Center area who were engaged before the Day Road people. They were engaged throughout the comprehensive plan process, that they can probably gather themselves together just as quickly as the Day Road. And I don't understand why we have to wait till after summer for Day Road or Island Center. Let's get, if we're going to start Day Road, if there's the ability to start Day Road, let's start Island Center.
Hey, anything else?
Real quick, I have been contacted by a couple of folks about following up on this issue in the business community who are trying to put together a little group of folks in the business community potentially affected by this. I think they're working on putting together a little group. Would it be helpful to connect them to you as you're going through this process when you get to the point of looking for feedback?
Which this are you talking about?
I'm talking about the Day Road Light okay. Industrial. That one.
The BI zone?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So should I connect them to you at some point?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on
Could I just ask one clarification? We've been talking about business industrial as if it's only Day Road. It's more than Day Road, isn't it?
Yes, there's two locations that we were looking at. One was the New Brooklyn area, and then the other was at Day Road and 305.
And just to throw in my two cents, if that can be addressed quickly, it was the subject of a moratorium because of urgent need, it's more than one area, I favor getting that checked off and then moving on.
Okay, let's move on.
Can I just say one more thing, Val?
Yes.
Because the urgent need is not for the purpose of the moratorium. What's going to happen... What the purpose of the moratorium is not going to be addressed through this process. That's not what people want.
We could go on, but I think we should move on to the next item, which is a discussion of direction on a potential infrastructure ballot initiative. Are you relying on us to start this discussion?
Good evening, Council. This continues your conversation related to potentially considering a ballot initiative related to capital projects. Previously, you've talked about non-motorized. My understanding is tonight's conversation may broaden that. And from a staff perspective, we provided in your packet a recap of the recent discussions that you've held, as well as a timeline for sort of the major components of a process to go from council direction to a ballot initiative. And that's on page 14 of your packet. And there are some sample actual calendar dates associated with different upcoming ballots. So you may find that helpful to your discussion tonight. We've also provided a new version of a list you've seen previously, which is the priority projects that the currently called Multimodal Transportation Advisory Committee identified in 2016. What's new in this version that you have in front of you is it shows not only the committee's scoring of each project, but a very, very rough cost estimate from the Public Works Department. Those numbers are to be considered just for relative order of magnitude, not any kind of project planning, but just to give you an idea of what dollars might be involved. And so that's pages 15 and 16. And then I understand the mayor and council member Medina have prepared some additional material that is also in the packet. But I think tonight was intended largely to be a council discussion. Staff is here from a number of departments to answer any questions you have, but those are the materials in front of you for this item.
Doug. So I think that the maybe an initial issue that we could talk about, and I'm happy to do it in any other fashion, but an initial issue we can talk about is whether or not, from council standpoint, there is any, as Mr. Medina would put it, any energy behind the idea of putting something on the ballot in November of this year, which means that council has to make decisions and staff has to draft ordinances and decisions have to be made by the middle of the summer, or whether council wishes to take a more measured approach and get the community, broader community involved in a discussion of these potential improvements and how they might be brought forward.
I am strongly in favor of a more measured, less hurried approach. I think we need to be very, very thoughtful about this. We're talking about a series of major projects and a lot of money. And I think we need more study and more thought, and we need a parking study done to give attention to the possible interconnectedness of, I think heard our comments tonight, but still I think there is attention that needs to be given to the interconnectedness of a revitalization of the downtown core along with the other modes of transportation that are all connected with one another. We are talking multimodal, not just bikes, but also cars and pedestrian and ADA compliant pathways. And I want to look at all of them thoughtfully.
Well, I've previously been a proponent of moving more quickly on this. And after, thinking about it and seeing some of our recent events, I'm much more in the camp of a more measured approach and doing something in 2018. It doesn't necessarily mean I think of it as a separate issue as to whether or not these things are linked or these two proposals. But in terms of the formation and the public process around the non-motorized transportation, the multimodal transportation bond, I think it's important to let that percolate some more.
Doug, is it a fact that the parking study RFQ has been issued, or is that still in works?
I believe that's been advertised, Barry, the parking study, yeah. So that is out on the street. I think we're scheduled in May to do the selection process.
So to the extent that people have had a chance to look at it, Cole and I have conspired on at least something to talk about in terms of a timeline leading to a decision on what to do about this. And an early element is to organize a task force that represents a broad cross-section of community interests to talk about these problems, the non-motorized improvements, the potential town square project in the context of what we learn from a parking study, and to come back to council in September with some specific recommendations as to whether or not it's a good idea to join these things, not join them, and what the scope of them should be, whether they should both happen or not. So I'd like to hear from council on that.
I appreciate the work you both have put into this, and I think it's very helpful sequencing of events. I'm not sure the timeline is realistic. For instance, it seems to assume we would take action tonight, and I would not be in favor of violating our multi-touch assumption to take action tonight. But I do think the notions that you've captured here are very valuable and helpful, and I'm generally supportive. I'd like some time to think about and talk about among ourselves and with the public about the composition of the committee, whether this is, you know, exactly the right mix. But it's close, I think. It's a really great design to work from, and I thank you.
Yeah, I would agree 100% with what Mike is saying. I mean, my it's very helpful to have a stake in the ground to look at from here. I have two thoughts coming, or a few thoughts coming away from it. I think it structurally it seems to presuppose really link these two measures, and I'm not sure that that's entirely helpful or consistent with where I come down on this issue. I think that the timelines are actually pretty aggressive, and so that should be considered. And the composition of the committee seems like just too many people to be a functioning committee, but I think it's a great start, and I appreciate it being done.
I don't have trouble with a task force looking into this. I mean, I don't not support the parking garage, but I don't oppose you guys putting together a group of people to study it.
I wonder if the mayor or the city manager has a report from IGWIG meetings about timing and potential other voter issues that might be coming from the schools or parks. I've heard there's a possibility of both sometime between now and the end of 2018. Is there any indication of that? I'm not suggesting that we should defer, but I think to the extent we're talking about a significantly large either bond or levy lid lift, we ought to think about it in the context of at least those two entities also looking for voter approval.
I think the issue there, because we have multiple taxing districts on the island, there will always be someone looking at a ballot measure, whether it's the school district, the park district, fire district, the library district, or the city. With that many different taxing jurisdictions, it's going to be, there'll be a lot of competition for time on the ballot, and we're continuing to talk with the different jurisdictions about when they may be coming forward with ballot measures. At this point, we don't have any specific dates, but I can tell you that The Library District and the Park District are both considering ballots in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you.
I want to clarify something. It's not that I don't support the parking garage. I don't support it being coupled with the non-motorized, and I'm concerned about who pays for it.
At least it was, I think, my concept, our concept, that if there is a task force, that one of the jobs of the task force would be to provide some community opinion feedback on the wisdom of combining and also on mechanisms for financing that are not simply going to the voters to pay for everything. But, you know, that's what we want people to talk about. I've heard kind of warm and fuzzy general comments about this outline, but I haven't heard any specific ideas about how we should move forward with this issue.
Well, to start talking specifics, but only to start, because I do think this needs to be a discussion over several meetings.
I agree with that.
I think in general, the notion, the size the committee contemplated is a bit too large. I think I would have a heavier downtown business representation, perhaps three downtown business representatives. Not sure we need six at large. Those are just kind of two quick reactions. I don't think they would be chosen next week, obviously. I think we'd be talking about picking them maybe sometime in May. And then the time frame from there would be stretched out a little bit further. But I think from there, it's a really thoughtful sequencing of events and topics that need to be addressed.
Is the intent, Mr. Mayor, that this would be one committee that would address both of these proposals, or?
Yeah, it would be one committee that would look at this combined problem and come back to the council with a recommendation about how to go about it, whether
right.
Separate, together, don't do one at all, only do the other one.
My instinct is to have groups that are that I think that I guess I don't see them as so intrinsically linked, and I know that maybe that's a different position that we have, and we should resolve that issue at the outset, because I don't think you need a farmer's market rep to talk about bike lanes.
So, do you mind?
Yeah.
A few comments. The timing on this is aggressive, absolutely. And the reason why we settled on this aggressive timeline is because, well, a general reason of we don't want this to keep dragging out. And the more specific reason is to try to get this on the ballot in February, which means this council has made a decision this year to put it on the ballot, meaning this council has made a decision. We don't let this roll into the next year when we're going to have two new council members on this council, and this whole thing might unravel, and neither one of these things might ever happen because we have the energy now to get it done. So that's part of what was driving our thinking behind the timing. I'm not saying those are reasons that have to win the day, but that's what we were thinking. Connecting the two, that issue of connecting the two, we've had two council discussions now where a majority of council members, at least four of the seven, have twice said they want to move forward with looking at these as a connected ballot measure. And if we need to take a vote to just finally put that to bed and have to quit talking about it, then I'm happy to take a vote. But that's the thinking behind this committee, is they're going to go into their work with the idea of these are going to be connected, and their job is to come back to us with recommendations on how to do that. Now, if their recommendation is, we think that's a crazy idea, well, they can come back with that recommendation. But the idea going in is they're looking for how to make the best package that involves these things being connected. So if we need to take a vote, I'm happy to do that. I just think you're in the minority on that one. So I appreciate that you keep bringing up your position. And more generally, I'm almost done, Mayor. More generally, I just hope we can just get on with it. Both of these projects have been things on the radar here at the city for many, many years. This will start the process. It'll start the process looking at them as a combined package. but it'll start the process for both of them. And however it ends up, one or both of these things are going to get going, and I hope we can just get on with it. So that's my plug.
Sure.
So I hear Cole saying something different than what you said, which is that this committee will look at whether they should be combined, in which case I think the makeup of the committee a little heavily weighted towards combining them. I just really think that if you want to get non-motorized done, you should not combine them. I don't think you're going to find a lot of support from the rest of the island. I think all these people that are downtown that are on this committee, you're going to support it because they're going to benefit from it. I don't think you'll find as much support outside of that, and I think you put the non-motorized at risk.
Well, I have to, and Sarah and I will always be this way, but I prefer to think of this as a town square project that may or may not have a parking structure, but that does require some significant capital investment. I very much support an activity for the to look at the town square. I also very much want to see this long-sought transportation non-motorized improvement go. I like the way the list has been presented, understanding these numbers are just relative, and it's a way to scope out, but for the first time, we have a way to begin to look at the magnitude of a bond to support bike trails and sidewalks and widened roadways and so on. So it's very important that we get that right, and we're moving in that direction. Both of these would take significant investments, and we've made the determination, I believe, to build the public safety facility with Councilmatic, so it means we'll have one or two, or none, but we'll have at least one issue to put to the ballot. And I think the discussion, the task force discussion, would be extremely helpful for me even to begin to see if these can fit together. I don't think that by putting people who have businesses in the Winslow core is an automatic signal that it's a yes vote. I think that's selling it a little short. I do understand that that's where most of the impetus has come from a number of years from the business core. But it has been made obvious. This is, the town square, in my view, would benefit all the citizens in the island the same way non-motorized improvements improve safety for drivers. And there are many more drivers with cars than anything else when we talk about this. So in that way, they're related. And I'm one of Cole's, I'm in that column, whichever one you're counting me on, I just want you to know. I like your plan, and I like it being aggressive. And part of the reason I ask about parks and schools is that we might end up with multiple February issues. I just know that tends to be how those organizations sometimes go. Sarah?
Well, I just want to have a voice of support for the idea of resolution, and to Cole's point, even if it's not where I want to go, is if, you know, let's not keep bringing up the same discussions over and over again if we've made a decision, so.
And I agree with that and much of what Wayne had to say, and I won't belabor it, but I do want to say that I hope we enter this process without factionalizing ourselves. We're much too small of a community in the island to talk about downtown versus everywhere else. I mean, we've just adopted a comprehensive plan that speaks of Winslow as the heart of the island, and that is historically what it has been, what I hope it will be, and what we hope it will be, because that's in our comprehensive plan. And Bill Isley, who has thought about these issues long and hard, has spoken to a task force, and I hope his voice will be given a much wider audience in this process. And he thinks of it as kind of, you know, spokes and a hub, and Winslow is the hub, and these non-motorized paths are all connected, and that's maybe too centralized because it's more of a network, but it is a network, and it benefits all of us. The geography of our island, the demography of our island are such that, cars will continue to be an important mode of transportation. And if we're to have a vibrant core for our civic life, our government, our arts, and commerce, we need to have ways to get downtown and a place for cars to go when they get downtown. So we need to talk about all that without presupposing the outcome, but it ought to be talked about together because they do fit together.
I guess to me, a task force, and the kind of task force I would support is one that's looking at this objectively, and I don't think this is. I think of the committee Doug put together for the electric utility, people who were looking at this objectively, whether it's a good idea or not, not going into it, thinking we're going to do this. I mean, the majority of the bond, I would presume, would be for non-motorized projects, but you only have two people that are from that faction on this committee. And I guess my other issue is that we're looking for a report, a parking study. You know, we're always talking about public transportation. We're always encouraging people to take a bus, to carpool. Yet why aren't we doing that with the employees who are using all the parking spaces downtown? You know, how do we know there's not an alternative to a parking garage to solve the parking problem? And so this just seems really fast, especially since it looks like most of the work's going to be done over the summer, where apparently people aren't around to do work. That's why we have to all this other stuff we're putting off till after summer. So I guess I have a concern with that, too.
So can we take some public comment? Public comment on this issue.
Well, if nobody else is going to comment, I am. I'm very concerned about the voting issue because the last vote that was done, the people spoke and said they did not want the fire station replaced and they did not want the police department replaced. And yet, you took resources to promote a new police department in spite of that vote, and you tore down the fire station. Now, I know a number of very good carpenters and people involved in the industry, and they say those two buildings were the best built business buildings on the island. So I do not understand why the council, the city, whoever was involved with it, would feel free to take down buildings that were well constructed. When the police chief says to me that the building has to be of a quality that he can feel proud in, and he's already in a building that he can feel proud of, I have real difficulty with that. It's not the building that makes the difference. It's the people in the building that makes the difference. And I taught long enough to know that. You can't rely on the building. Now, I'm concerned about a couple of other things, and this town square thing is a real aggravation to me, and you all know that. This land, the one that is called Farmers Market, that was dedicated to the market, and the market has operated on that land for 20 years. I have the blueprint that shows Farmers Market. I have the contract that shows Farmers Market. And for the city to be ignoring that space is dedicated space, for Schultz to be ignoring the fact that his hand-picked committee supported that space should have a cover on it and it would be usable for every single organization on the island. To ignore those kinds of things from hand-picked people, business people around the island, just seems to me like it's an insult to those people for the time they took, for the input that they had, and that they agreed that a cover on that space would extend it. And I think that when you keep having committees and you don't pay attention to what those committees are saying because they didn't give you the information you wanted, you insult the public.
Anybody else like to comment on this at this time? Mr. Wallant?
Don Wallant, 359 Gideon Lane. I just wanted to reinforce the notion that to have a truly integrated transportation system, I believe we have to be very actively thinking about transit, as important as bicycle and pedestrian travel are. In order to have move people efficiently through the SR 305 corridor, which will continue to be critical spine, the critical spine for transportation of all kinds on the island, we really can't do it unless we are using transit, and any planning should be, I believe, closely coordinated with the SR 305 corridor study that's in the process of being launched. So what that means specifically for the process that's being proposed, I don't have a thought. I haven't had a chance to read the work that you've done. But I do hope that transit will be actively involved. That would mean Kitsap Transit and I believe also ferries as a form of mass transit in the process.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to comment, Ross?
Ross Hathaway, 4426 Blakely Avenue Northeast, Squeaky Wheels. Just want to echo what Peter said earlier tonight about decoupling these two. It's very important to move forward on the non-motorized transportation component. These are critical safety improvements. They're long due, long overdue. And I understand the desire to have a town square project, and I think that's going to take a while to go through the process, frankly. I think there's a lot of discovery along that way. I think we're ready to move forward on non-motorized improvements. I do understand the concerns about, public concerns about trees, and this recent issues, I think, are some learning opportunities. But I think at this point, we need to move forward on non-motorized transportation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brandon Fouts at 357 High School Road. Living here in town, I cannot imagine how you expect to get 300 or 400 cars parked between Madison and Erickson. You go out there when the school opens or closes and you have a mile backup on High School Road in both directions. You practically have a mile backup both directions on Madison here. And how you're gonna get extra cars into this area, I can't imagine how you're gonna possibly do that. The other thing, I don't understand why 100 city employees think they have to park next to City Hall for their jobs. Why doesn't the city encourage carpooling, taking public transportation, walking to work for any of those who might actually live here on the island? And the almost 10 years ago now, there was a big plan that the ferry was going to do and the city was going to do. And they had a very excellent idea for parking, which is to take the garage, or they take the parking lot that's over there by the ferry and make it a multi-layered, I think it was going to go down 3 stories. So if you want to have some place to park cars, why don't you go where that existing parking lot is and build your multi-story parking over there? Why try to put it in the middle of town where it's already got so much traffic at certain hours of the day? You have gridlock practically. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, hearing no further comment. Let me suggest that this outline that Cole and I provided doesn't contemplate actually having a task force appointed until the third week in May. And so maybe we take the comments we've heard tonight with regard to the composition of a task force and other comments we've heard and massage this and come back to council with an actual proposition that might, in a couple meetings, morph into some action. Acceptable? Okay. So we'll move on to item 5C, which is a review of the Olympic Drive tree removal and replanting plan.
Good evening, Council. This is a continuation of the discussion last week about the Olympic Drive non-motorized improvement project. At last meeting, council directed that the proposed tree removal be indicated in the field. So we marked, as of last Thursday, we marked the trees that would be slated for removal under the current design, as well as mark the line of the new right-of-way and cleared a little path through the woods so that folks could walk down that path and see the markings on the trees. We posted this information on the city website also on Thursday, and then it's also repeated here in the agenda bill that was published on Friday. So the information is there, and I don't know if there's any questions about which trees are to be removed, but we can continue to discuss that.
Well, I walked through there today, and I appreciate the work. That's your little trail, huh? I wonder where that
well, I didn't came. Do it personally, okay. But public works.
I wondered where that came from, but it was helpful to be able to get around the other side, especially the mark of the right-of-way. I thought that was very helpful. So thank you for doing that. The first thing I come away with is we have to have one massive ivy removal activity going on all the way to the park, and we'll deal with that later. Right. But so many of the trees that will stand are not very pretty to behold at this point.
I think you should mention that. Because I was just emailing with Barry last week about how the fact that in a few years, I think the entire 305 right-of-way is going to be just covered with ivy. And 30 years from now, the ivy will have killed all those trees, and it'll just be an ivy wasteland. And it appears that no one is really in charge of that. It's state property. Anyway, that's an aside. That doesn't really matter. We've had some questions about the staging area for this project. I think you've received some questions about whether the little signage and kiosk down there would be removed for the waterfront trail.
They don't have to be. It'll be up to the contractor. We've designated a couple spots. One is right there near that kiosk and the anchor next to the trail, and the other one is in the WashDOT ferry yard. So those are being offered up for the contractor to store materials, probably pipe and maybe retaining block for the retaining wall and some things like that. It won't be an area that requires excavation or clearing at all. So it's a matter of, if they think they need to move the sign and put it back later, they can. It says in the drawings that everything has to be restored to original. So we don't know for sure if they want to do that or not, but they'll have to restore it if they do.
And that is the area that we're talking about, though.
Right there, right at the kiosk and the anchor, and there's a couple rocks and a sign or two there.
They'd have to restore everything if they move it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And just to confirm, because we've heard conflicting concerns, no trees would be coming down in the area we're talking about.
No.
Barry, it's not been clear to me what the impact of this project will be on the existing Waypoint Park. Can you talk about that?
Well, it shouldn't really impact it at all. The idea is that the enhanced entryway, including the wider sidewalk and the bike lane, would tie into it. It wouldn't take away from it. So the bike lane, which is kind of the main new feature on that side, it won't exist until it passes Waypoint Park. Really, they'll still be in the same lane that they are now, and then they'll swerve over to the right into the expanded right-of-way, which is south of the Waypoint or east, as you might look at it. But basically, as the bikes get past Waypoint Park, then the right-of-way will widen out, and they'll be able to have their own dedicated lane. And of course, that's also where the sidewalk will be wider, but the sidewalk will tie into the existing sidewalk that ties into Waypoint Park. So there won't be any adverse impacts. It'll be, and then there'll be some landscaping there to try to taper those lanes into the park to make it look a smooth transition.
So Deputy Mayor Peltier was one who had a lot of concern. That didn't make him sick, but he is sick. And he asked me to pass on his hope, and I hope this is meaningful to you. It's not to me. that we can do our best to retain the trees that are indicated as possibly savable in the arbor's report. Are there trees that are not being currently preserved that are identified as potentially savable?
Well, most of the ones that are possibly savable, I believe, are retainable. The really the ones that are of significance are there's four big fir trees and a couple larger madrones that are right on the border or right at the right-of-way or slightly inside the right-of-way that are being recommended for removal by the arborist report. The ones that were possibly retainable, we've tried to accommodate, including the madrone that has the Doug fir right next to it and where the wall has been jogged around to retain.
Right. Any other questions for Mr. Lovelace? Go ahead.
So I guess just to boil it all down, if we're going to build what is designed, that with all the green lines and the expanded sidewalk, there's just no way to do that without taking down those 18 trees, right? There's just no other way to do it.
Well, for most of them, that's true because, you know, in reality, you know, we have a four-lane road with two narrow sidewalks, and we're adding to that three bike lanes. That's about 15 feet. A center lane, a divider strip, which is 2 feet, that's 17. A sidewalk, that's 9 feet, that's 26 feet. And a little planter strip or two. So you're right around 30 feet of new development. There needs to be room for that. And really, those are things that are really going to enhance, obviously, the whole main entrance to the city here. You know, we have talked about being very careful, and there's a couple of those. There's one Doug fir in particular that's seems to be right on the line. And so we've talked about, is there a way to potentially work around it? The way the report was prepared and the recommendation was that, you know, we have to get about 30 more feet of right of way, and it drops off pretty steeply there, so you need a retaining wall. The retaining wall has a footing to it, and then you need a little bit of, you know, 10 feet or so outside that to have equipment to be able to work. So it ends up being like 40 some feet of clearing. Maybe with some care and some extra money, we might be able to do some more notching out of the wall. We had some ideas of can we get any little bit of tapering if it's close to save a tree. Of course, you know, we're not just talking the tree trunk. Typically, you've got to preserve or not try to disturb out within the drip line of the tree, so that's quite a bit wider than just a 30-inch trunk, for example. So it could be a really big area, and if you start impacting, you really can't get right up to the trunk, obviously, with your disturbance and hope the tree will survive. We've talked about maybe for one or two of the significant trees, which there happens to be, you know, only a handful of really significant ones, 18 trees, a lot of them are alders and things that aren't quite as valuable. But there are a handful of big Doug firs and a couple of madronas. And, you know, things like, you know, notching out the retaining wall. So the retaining wall is going to be roughly 160 feet long, and could you notch it out around the trees and then put a boardwalk section in there or something so you wouldn't disturb the trunk? You shouldn't disturb the root, but maybe bridge it in a section or two. You know, those could be expensive fixes, but maybe they're worth looking at to see if... I think it would only be maybe one or two trees that you could do that with, and that's the kind of... thing you could probably try to do, notch the wall and put a boardwalk section, use the walls and abutment on either side of the root and see if that would work, something like that.
Is it possible as you go through the process with a contractor to, I don't know, get bids on doing it either one of those ways and see what the cost is?
Well, I think it comes a timing issue then. We need to look at, if this is something the council's interested in, we need to look at can we do it by a design change now? Do we have time to do that? as we're in the middle of this WashDOT review and final approval of drawings and trying to keep on a reasonable timeline in the construction period this year, or do we just try to do a change order or do an amendment after the award? I know that's not usually the best economic way to do it, but it might be the most expedient way to stay on a timeline and keep the project moving.
I don't know if anyone else on council has any energy around this, but I like the second option. That sounds workable.
We should be ready if Barry comes back with a budget amendment specifically to cover these change orders. I mean, I certainly would think that might be something we might have to do.
Yeah. I think it would cost more money. We did a similar thing on Cave Avenue on a smaller scale, if you recall. On just the sidewalk, we kind of cantilevered a grating around a big Douglas fir or something.
And there's a bridge over the roots of the tree.
Right,
Any other questions for Mr. Lovelace at this point? Public comment on this issue?
I guess I have a lot of comments, but that's too bad. I worked at EPA years ago, Environmental Protection Agency. 20 years ago, when they warned the island that we needed to protect our trees because they were holding the water above ground so it wouldn't go into the aquifer, and we have ignored that. When you start talking about taking down 220 trees or whatever we're talking about here, instead of working around those trees, and you talk about a pathway through the side of the road that is so wide, it serves relatively little purpose. I don't know how many of you drive around the highway and see the bikers. Bikers aren't going two and three abreast. They're going single file and they're going like the Dickens. If you ever have two wheelchair people going on that road, I will be shocked that they would be crossing each other or passing each other. Look at the maximum amount that you are allowing for that type of thing when you might have a minimal amount. What are we paying? How many millions of dollars so two wheelchairs can pass when we'll be lucky if we ever have one instance of that? We won't even have two bikers pass at the same time. This is reaching a level of ridiculousness that we should never have arrived at, because the trees are our value, not whether we have a wide path for everybody to drive their bikes and their wheelchairs at the same time.
Doug Rao, 12266 Kenneth Place. I was just looking at Mount Rushmore earlier today, and I'll send you pictures. They build their trails about that far from the trunk because they've moved the base away, cantilevered the trail so that the roots are protected. And it would be something we could follow in that very short distance by the Gateway Park. Thank you.
Good evening, John Perkins, 263 Cave Avenue. And I just want to address, I think I've talked to a number of you and city staff about people we know that we've made mistakes on 305. People have expressed shock. Some of you on the council have, some of your city employees, as the number of trees that were cut that you weren't anticipating. And I think we need to look at that and ask ourselves, how do we protect against these shocks and this next phase of looking at Olympic Drive? The other thing, for 10 years, I was CEO of a power company in Pennsylvania. I built power plants. I owned them. My company owned them, and transmission lines and many other things. We let out a lot of contracts. I was quite shocked today when I spent a bunch of time down here in the city hall and discovered that your RFP for that trail going up 305 did not include a staging area. And I don't know if you've been talking about the staging area for the Olympic Drive, but it sounds like you're talking about little storage houses. Well, when you cut down trees, you got to put them someplace. And what's happened up there is, in fact, because there was no staging area in the RFP, a deal was struck between John and Alice Teresi and a construction contractor to create a huge construction site. And right in front of them, it happens to be right in front of my condominium. Some of my neighbors are here. It's caused tremendous, tremendous distress and economic loss. My value property's gone down. I can't do my job. I'm a writer. That's my profession. I can't write in my own house. And there was no RFP let. I don't understand that. Furthermore, there was no permit. There's no, that place still isn't permitted. The Teresi's, I went to their office today, the Teresi's submitted a request for a permit on April 4th. I returned home after being away for 5 days on March 28th, and there was heavy, heavy construction. The whole site had been taken out, and there were big excavators in there. There hadn't even been a submitted request for a permit, and there still hasn't been a permit. And here we've had construction for 3 weeks. Now, that's not a responsible way to run a city. And before you move forward with doing anything on Olympic Way, and incidentally, I got to say, I like bike paths. I'm not opposed to the bike path, but I like responsible engineering and planning also. And to have a construction site that was never in an RFP and was never permitted, to me, makes absolutely no sense. So I would ask this city council, how do you intend to learn from the terrible errors that have already been made in the last 3 weeks? On the construction that's been done, what will you learn from that, and how will you implement what you learned? I've just written a letter, which I'm going to stop talking now, but this is to Mr. Gary Christensen. Is he still here?
Just leave your letter with us.
Okay, I'll leave your letter and pass it out to all of you, okay?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. And if anybody else wants copies of the letter, they're up there on the table.
Yes.
Good evening, Barbara Trafton, 10315 Northeast Pineway. I wrote an email to all of you and just wanted to get up. I hadn't realized that the trail had been, or not the trail, but the trees had been flagged before I sent my email. And thank you to the city for doing so. I think if you walk along that row, you see that there are two enormous fir trees that are very close to the edge of the line. And if there is a way to reconsider maybe the planting strip, which is a couple feet, you might be able to save some big trees. A planting strip may have some environmental value, but not as much as an existing woodland. I also wanted to revisit the section of your report that talks about the planting selection by the Bainbridge Island Parks Department. I spoke to the district today, and this list actually came from Ann Lovejoy, and it was for the waypoint, not for the woods along that road. These are ornamental plants, and they are basically to fix the section of the road that was explained to be, to fix the part of the waypoint that would be impacted by the widened road. And I'm delighted to hear the staging area is not going to remove trees. This was not what Charles Schmidt and I were told in three meetings with the engineer. So I think it's scary when we're hearing different things at different times from the city. And I don't know how that can be, you know, rectified as we go forward, thinking about the learning lessons and moving forward. But I just hope that this project, we will consider these things carefully and try to save as many of the trees as possible and still have bike paths. Thank you.
So my name is Charles Schmidt. I'm the chair of the Waterfront Trail Committee that has that kiosk down at the bottom of Harborview there. Drive. First of all, before I talk about staging, I'd like to mention about, I mean, it's not just the trees, but it's also the fact that 30 feet is going to be taken out of that area. So all of a sudden you have 30 feet of more concrete and asphalt. So when you drive down there, it's like a probably six lane highway. I mean, granted, there's this trade-off with bicycle trails. I mean, there's three, part of that 30 feet is three bicycle trails, one going up, one going down, and one in the middle. So this, I think carefully looking at a trade-off of two good things, that is having bicycle paths and trees and having some sort of natural look when you come out of that ferry is very important. But then I'd like to talk about, I was bothered to hear the Public Works Director Barry Loveless say that I'd be working, or I wouldn't even be working with the contractor. Who is working with the contractor? The city? I mean, the city is supposed to be my representative, and we put in that kiosk with Washington State Ferries and the city 10, 15 years ago. I mean, that's the beginning of the Waterfront Trail. So you're saying, well, we'll just see what the contractor wants to do. The contractor, well, we've just heard from a previous person about the contractor problems up there on the highway. So here I'm being told, not even work with a contractor. Contractor just puts it into the city. And, you know, this is all volunteer work that's been done in the Waterfront Trail. And so just treating volunteers like, well, you'll just have to take off this sign or you'll have to move the anchor. I think moving the anchor is going to not be easy if you know that anchor. But so I was disappointed to hear that, and I'd like to hear some sort of representation from the Waterfront Trail Committee. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Demi Allen, 368 Wills Lane. Charles alluded to this, but what we have here is a bit of a values conflict. Values that we all share are in conflict to some extent on this project. Fortunately, with respect to the Olympic Drive project, the number of trees involved is small. There are some significant trees, and I very much appreciate city staff specifically tagging the ones that are slated for removal. So, I love trees, lifelong member of the Nature Conservancy, but I also believe that we need high-quality infrastructure that serves the needs of all users of the right-of-way. We've lived for so long with infrastructure that really only works for cars that we think is okay, it's what we know. But it's not okay, because it leaves a lot of people out. People who would like to have a pleasant walk to their destination without being immediately next to a car lane. People and families who'd like to be able to ride their bikes but are scared of mixing with cars. And as we've discussed before, this is the largest concentration of bikers and pedestrians on the island. If there's one place we should have high quality infrastructure that meets current best practices, this is it. I strongly support anything we can do to maintain the significant trees at the edge of the right-of-way, especially the large fir tree that is right on the edge. I hope we can find a solution to that. But let's move forward with this important project as designed. Thank you.
Thank you. You only get one, Ross. I say, you only get one, you're done.
Oh, is that true?
Yes, that's true.
Oh, sorry about that.
But thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Brendan.
Helps to have friends.
Ross Hathaway, 4426 Blakely Avenue, Northeast. I really do appreciate the staff's hard work on this. Demi's right. This is there's a balancing act between values here. There is going to be some vegetation in that widened area, and I appreciate Charles' concern. We have talked with city staff recently about maybe looking at some boardwalk designs, and we really encourage trying to preserve those trees. We think we can preserve some more trees out there. Thank you very much. By the way, please keep the project moving forward. This is critical. Thanks.
Anyone else?
I'm Richard Potter, 831 Deer Cliff Road, and I'm a member of Squeaky Wheels, but I'm also here as a citizen. This area of the traffic patterns of Bainbridge Island right here is the focal point of tempers. We're all in a hurry to get to the boat. We don't want to get in an accident. And we're all in a hurry to get home when we're off of the boat. And so I support the project because there needs to be room for each form of transportation. And you see more and more traffic coming to the ferry today. You've heard of the traffic gridlock that Seattle experiences all day long, almost 7 days a week. And so more and more people are going to go to the bicycles. There are e-bikes, electric bikes, and there's more and more of those on the road. I think 2 years ago, we might have seen one or two on the boat. Every commute boat in the morning now and in the evening, there's at least three boats that have four and five and six of these e-bikes, and people are recognizing that that's an easier way to get through traffic and get to the boat, get through Seattle, and then come home. And with this concentration of traffic and different modes of transportation and tempers, we want to give everybody space so that they don't interact the wrong way. So I support the project.
Thank you. You got somebody that's going to stand up for you?
I just want to compliment the council and staff and the host of folks in the community who are wrestling with, I would call it a dynamic tension between trying to have the best greenscape and the best gray infrastructure. And I think that this discussion is an example of moving forward. Each time we do something, we get better at it. So I just want to compliment the House.
Any other public comment? All right, that concludes the comment on this, and this was just an information item tonight, so no one in the council has anything further. We'll move on to new business item 6A, which is ordinance 2017-09, amending Bainbridge Island Municipal Code Chapter 3.24 regarding equipment rental and revolving fund.
Good evening, Council. This is a housekeeping item related to amending an existing portion of code. You might remember that as part of the budget, we implemented the equipment rental fund. And as we have been working to implement that fund, we identified some recommended changes to simplify the code and also make just a couple of text edits. I'd be happy to take any questions. I'll just highlight a couple. One is that we renamed the fund, or we are suggesting renaming it from equipment rental to equipment rental and revolving. This highlights the fact that this fund is intended as a revolving fund where we save and then purchase equipment and vehicles for the city. We've also removed, or suggesting that we remove, some of the really specific administrative language around setting up different sub-accounts and adopting a schedule, a rental schedule, while preserving the intention that council appropriates and then staff spends based on the budgeted appropriations. This is the first touch. I'd be happy to take any questions. If you don't have any questions, we are requesting that you forward it to the next business meeting.
Any questions for Ellen? Is there any public comment on this topic? Or motion?
I move that the City Council forward to the May 9th, 2017 Consent Agenda Ordinance Number 2017-09, amending BIMC Chapter 3.24, Equipment Rental and Revolving Fund.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. Councilmember, pardon me?
Aye.
Oh, five. All right. It carries five in favor, one absent, and one, I guess, two absent for this.
Thank you.
Disposed.
Move on to item 6B, which is aquatic lease with the Department of Natural Resources for Eagle Harbor.
Good evening, Council. Tonight is your first look at an agreement that city staff has been working on for several months. This is our lease agreement with the Department of Natural Resources for portions of Eagle Harbor. And we have a current lease with them that we signed in 2011. And we are proposing to enter into a new lease, which I will talk with you about a little bit tonight. I will hit some of the highlights, and the full document is in your package. So the city actually leases two areas from DNR, titled Area A and Area B, catchily. They do not have exhibits in the current lease to show you what these areas look like, so I've borrowed the exhibits from the previous lease or the existing lease. Area A looks like this shape, and lightly you can see the shadow of the existing city dock sort of poking into that area, and so that'll give you a sense of about how far offshore Area A is. And then Area B is shaped like this, and it covers the site of our open water marina, which is the only residential marina on state lands in the state of Washington. So we were the first and have continued to be trailblazers on that. So what we lease from DNR are these two areas. And some key changes to the agreement. The main change and the main purpose of our new lease is to develop an agreement that covers the same length of time as the RCO grant funding that we received for the City Dock project. So some of you will remember that when we were first applying for that grant in the initial rounds, there were concerns that the RCO required us to have control of the lease area for the amount of time that matched up to the grant. They have a funding requirement for a 25 years control. And our lease agreement with DNR was for a 12-year term that was going to expire in 2023. So DNR expressed their intent to work on extending that term when the time came. That time is now. And they have, as a policy, they do not issue lease amendments. So in order to get an extended term, we had to enter into an entirely new agreement. So the rationale for doing this at all was to get a lease term that runs 25 years. We'll actually have a 26-year term just to cover the year of construction that we'll be starting this year. So that's a main change. Something that isn't a very significant change, but that we were concerned about, is the amount of annual rent that we will pay to DNR. And happily, that rent will stay effectively the same. It escalates every year, but for comparison, we can look at the charge for 2018. We will owe them $15,748 for the 12 months that run into April of next year, and that compares to $16,500, which is what we paid them this year. So they had to come up with a new comparable parcel to use for their rent calculations, so that was a kind of an open-ended concern going into the process. So we're happy to see that the rent is really very consistent with what we're paying today. Another change, which probably none of you have had the opportunity to think very much about, is that our 2011 lease had as a requirement that the residents in the open water marina who had what we call fore and aft moorage or dual point moorage, that was a requirement in our DNR lease. They required that those boats be moored in that way. And in this lease, they, I think, based on the positive experience we've had for the 4 or 5 years under the existing lease, have allowed us to switch to single point moorage or swing moorage. So rather than being tied fore and aft to a pair of buoys, the folks who have that moorage will be anchored to one buoy and will swing together. I'll have a graphic that may help you understand why that's important. This is a diagram that shows the 10 pairs of buoys that we indicated on the original permit request that we made. The red sort of lit up buoy circles are the locations we actually installed. So we had a permit for 10 pair or 20 buoys. We had money at the time that let us put in 5 pair or 10 buoys, and those are the red circles you see. The ability to go to swing moorage means that those 10 buoys today support 5 vessels. Immediately, those 10 buoys will support 10 vessels. And that's great because, as you can see, we now have doubled our capacity without spending any additional money. It's particularly useful because the linear moorage structure, which is the kind of spider web shape in the middle, has come to the end and beyond of its life cycle. It's very expensive to clean it every year, and we are concerned with how long it will be viable. And we have three tenants on the linear moorage today. What going to a single moorage lets us do is accommodate everybody who's in the marina today on those existing buoys without additional expense or permitting. So that's a good thing for us too. The benefits to single port moorage, just to kind of recap from the harbor master's perspective, and the tenants share this belief too, it's better for the hardware. There's less strain when the wind blows on by having the vessels be able to swing in a circle. It's easier to moor when you're only trying to catch one buoy rather than two. And they will all swing in agreement, which is a bit safer. And then this is goes to the, these other points go to the issue of our infrastructure. So now we can support 10 vessels with the buoys we have, and we can manage the change as we take out the linear moorage in a much more cost-effective way than we otherwise would. So thanks to DNR for considering that request and for supporting it, which is not something that we have the capacity to do today. Something else that's new is that our previous lease did not acknowledge the fact that there's a pretty significant sailing float within our lease area. DNR rectified this by identifying the float in this lease and by also expressing some stewardship measures or requirements for that float for the future. This is a diagram that will help you see where that is. That's a photograph, an aerial view of the existing dock, and the structure inside the circle is the sailing float. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the context of the next item, and we can come back to that slide if it's helpful. The city's ultimate goal is to have that sailing float move just a bit further to the east, because we anticipate that the new dock will have additional activity and boating going on in that area. And so we would like to work with the Park District to get the sailing float moved eventually to a new location. And that's really it for highlights. There's other than that, it's a pretty standard agreement. We've been working with their attorneys and our city attorney, and we feel very positive about the agreement that we've crafted, and we're looking forward to executing it. What's scheduled to have you take this first look tonight and then consider approval at the next meeting on the 25th.
Questions for Morgan?
Yeah. Will this agreement impact the total number of liveaboards we can allow there? My conflating issues, or is that relate here?
Let's see. So there is a requirement in our SMP that is the liveaboard ratio that is not have anything to do with this agreement. This agreement, though, does provide the permission for us to have our own city's open water marina where we have liveaboard residents, but all of the capacity and tenant rules and best practices that we have today have been updated and are preserved in this agreement. So it does not impact them in any way. If anything, it's even more supportive of our open water marina because it's been such a good pilot program. So
are all the liveaboards that are currently living out there and that might live out there living in this leased property, or are there other properties?
No, and there are private marinas that have liveaboards living in within them.
Okay, I saw this does have a limit on the number of liveaboards that can live in the area we're leasing, but there are more areas out there where there are liveaboards.
Yeah, and those are really the folks that are more impacted by, I think, that ratio. What we have is the capacity to put essentially five today. Let's just deal with this, what we have out there today. We have five pairs of fore and aft buoys, so we could have five residents there, and we could have as many as another six vessels on our linear. So we think we could have as many as 11 vessels there today. We have never reached that capacity. So when we change to single point, we'll have 10 spaces here, which is pretty close to the 11 we could host. And if we were to find that we have real demand that would suggest we should think about putting in some additional buoys, we can come back to council and talk to you about that. We haven't had that experience yet. But so we have a pretty limited number of liveaboards that are hosted in the city's open water marina. There are other liveaboards who are resident in the private marinas.
Any questions for Morgan? Is there any public comment on this issue? Charles.
It was Charles Schmidt, and having served on the Harbor Management Committee, and Val also in the past served on that. I thought one of the reasons that there was a double moorage was that you'd only have to pay for the DNR land right below it. And so once you have single moorage, then all of a sudden they were counting that whole circle that went around. So I guess that's changed somehow. So you don't, the area is might be larger, but you just have a fixed price for that. And then my other point was that the nice thing about having single moorage is, well, when you have double moorage and the wind's coming across your ship, you actually go back and forth like that. So that's another advantage for those people that want to get a good night's sleep out there. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other public comment on this topic? Motion from council?
Sure. I move that the City Council forward this item to the agenda for the April 25th, 2017 council meeting for consideration of approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? It carries unanimously. We now are at item 6C, which is a memorandum of agreement with the Park District regarding the sailing float.
Thank you, Council. This one, it may feel a little more complicated. It's related to the DNR lease. As I said, the lease includes and acknowledges the sailing float that will remain in the city's lease area. And the city wanted to work with the Park District to make sure that we had a common understanding of what the path forward with that sailing float was going to be before we execute the lease with DNR. So by including it on our lease, we are taking responsibility for it. And before we did that, we wanted to make sure we had worked through some planning with the Parks District about what we believe should happen in the future. Our first choice, and it's something that they support, were we able to, we would like, as shown in this diagram, to ask the Park District to move the sailing float further east to a new location and to then enter into their own sublease with DNR so that they could have a direct relationship with that agency and work together with them independently on any issues related to their vessel. They're not able to do that at this time because the structure that exists cannot move to a new location because it's not able to receive a permit based on its current construction. And so what we propose to do is to offer them a sublease for a period of time, which we've suggested 5 years, which will give them the opportunity to take the steps they need to take to either improve or replace that structure to the point where it can receive a permit, to identify a new location, to enter into a new agreement with DNR, and then to kind of complete this path. We think it's important to do that, as I said, just from a best practice standpoint. We think it would be preferential to have them in a different location and for them to have their own direct relationship with DNR. And then in terms of environmental stewardship, we have gone to great lengths and expense to build a new city dock that reflects our environmental goals and standards. And we think that it's important to have the structures we're responsible for match that as well. And so that's why the request is for them to be on this path. At the same time, we're really supportive of the extensive community programming that's hosted by the structure. We don't want to disrupt that. We recognize that in the same way that it's taken us several years to plan for, permit, and fund our project, that it will take them several years to execute this. And so that's the purpose of providing a 5-year sublease. We aren't able to create a process where we instantaneously offered their sublease at the same time we were entering this lease. So the MOA is intended to stand in between those instruments and just express the goals through this memorandum of agreement, and then we will come forward with a sublease that looks very much in alignment with what you see in this MOA. So I'm not sure if that was clear enough or not, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
So I don't see it's in the memorandum of agreement, but I assume that if for some reason the Park District ceased to need a float in Eagle Harbor, that the lease would have some sort of termination agreement. So that
right, we'll have our standard termination on either by either party with sufficient notice. So the sublease will have those terms.
Any other questions for Morgan on this? Any public comment on this topic? Is there a motion on this?
I move the City Council forward this memorandum of agreement to the City Council agenda for April 25th, 2017 for consideration of approval.
I moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries unanimously, but this time unanimous is five people. Councilmember Townsend is off the dais for a moment.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you. We move now to an item of discussion to discuss a request for retail cannabis in Winslow. This is on the agenda because council members have received communication from several people who are interested in establishing a shop on Winslow Way in the vicinity of the police station. And before we task the city staff with any work whatsoever on this, we wanted to take the temperature of council as to whether or not there was any interest in considering this and asking the staff to brief us on the legalities and expend resources on it. So I'd open that for discussion.
I don't have an appetite for it. One, I don't support the change, and two, this was when we originally had to cite this use, that was a pretty big deal. And I don't, we have a lot of things on our list, and I don't think that this is a priority either way, and because I think it'll take, it's not going to be, would not be an easy change.
Any other council comment?
In the description, talks about a second shop, but in fact, we would, by ordinance, describe a new location outside of Day Road, which let's just say is in the Winslow core, so it could be any number, provided it meets all other requirements. It may not, it isn't just some legislation to accommodate a second shop. Is that correct?
No, you're correct.
Yeah.
We've had a request for a particular, but the change would be generic.
Much wider. We know more than we knew when we debated and came to the conclusion to limit the city's involvement in the cannabis business to just a retail one outlet or an outlet located or outlets located on in the Day Road business area. I wonder, and I'm not suggesting we open this door at this point, but I wonder if we would consider a grow opportunity, which we rejected last time, and also, we also, I believe, prohibit medical marijuana sales in the island. So, do we not? I thought we did, because there was no state ordinance about medical marijuana when we adopted our ordinance.
They're all merged into one.
So they're merged now, so in effect, okay, good. In any case, the conditions have changed, and even if we want to, I believe the status quo is adequate, but, and I also agree that we have a lot on our plate. I think it might be worth reviewing the ordinance in light of how things have changed and how neighboring states And countries are also in this business to what extent it affects the city, but not now.
Is there a public comment? You go ahead. You want to.
I'd be supportive of asking staff to look into this and coming back to us with some information. I looked into it briefly myself. I don't think we'd be asked. I don't think it'd take a lot of time for staff to look into it. I mean, I looked up the RCW. The RCW was amended since the council originally took this up. It clearly states that we could make the change that's being asked of us. I don't think it'd be a terrible burden on staff to come back to us with that. I wasn't on council when you guys went through this the first time. I understand that was a difficult process. But having not been through it, I don't have the fear of it that some others on council might. My gut feeling is times have changed a lot since then. Council took this on when this whole thing was unrolling and there was a lot of misperceptions in the community. And I wonder if it would be a big deal this time around. I think it might not. I think it might be an easy change. It wouldn't take that much time. But if it did take time, I don't think it would be staff time developing information for us. I think it'd be our time dealing with it here in meetings. So I'm supportive of it.
Public comment.
Bevan Bryan, 12089 Miller Road. My brother and I are proposing two simple text amendments. One is a zone text amendment, and one is a buffer reduction amendment. Both of those we can provide to the cities, take the load off of Doug and Jennifer Sutton. We 73%, I think, of the population of Bainbridge voted pro cannabis. Paper and Leaf has definitely demonstrated that crime and safety issues related to traffic are non-existent. So we think that times have changed and that Winslow could use this shop to help with foot traffic for the other retail locations or commercial spaces, as well as fill some of these spaces that are currently empty in those areas.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else?
Joe Gerlando from Harbor Square. I understand his point about it's legal, and there may have been things that the council didn't take into account before. However, if you put the shop where he wants to put it right now, that's a retail spot that you're going to have to recreate. It's right across the street from Harbor Square. You've already had a lot of discussions about all the traffic problems. Any of you who have been on Winslow Way that time, most of the day, there's lots of traffic. When the ferries come in, it backs up everywhere. So you're going to increase the traffic, have a parking problem, which you already have. You're going to also create a noise problem for all the residents along the harbor, that part of Winslow. And believe it or not, there will be a pollution problem because despite the fact that the law says you don't smoke in public, who's going to enforce that? Your police, there really isn't going to have enough time to be checking people. So there'll be people walking, and I guarantee you they'll pull their cigarettes out and smoke right underneath windows. And there's other locations. And the reason legally, I think right now, the ordinance says 1,000 feet from any transportation. Is that correct? Okay, so you're going to have to change the ordinance, and you're going to have to also take into account that that's not a retail space. Okay, it's an office space. And then you're going to add to the traffic problems we already have, and you're going to inconvenience everybody else. And if you get more foot traffic, how late are they going to stay open? Right now, at 6 o'clock, that whole part of it becomes very quiet except for the traffic coming from the ferry. So you're going to increase that. So the quality of living and life for the people in Harbor Square is going to go down. And despite what some people think, the property values will go down, which is going to take your tax base down lower. And there should be other places that you could do within the existing ordinance. And from what I understand, you did that ordinance originally to prevent these type of things, to limit where they could go and still fall within the law that allows people to do it. So, you know, those are the reasons I think you shouldn't change what you've already put in a place, which has worked, and you can find other places to put it and not put more problems on your infrastructure, your traffic. And, oh, by the way, the guys are building behind us had to give a report on the traffic effect of building all those new places behind Harbor Square. We're going to get one for that, too. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else?
My name is Larry Keita, and I'm from Harbor Square Loop as well. My biggest concern about that is there's actually a school bus stop directly across from that building.
Hi, I'm Lee Shugart. I live at Harbor Square. But I have lived... What? Oh. Can you hear me now? I have lived on Cave for over 25 years. I feel like it's Cave community. And like the gentleman just stated, the school bus stop is right across the street from the location that you plan on doing this. But it's just not Harbor Square. It's all of Cave Avenue. I want to make that clear.
Good evening. My name is Margaret Kemp Williams. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm also a resident of Harbor Square. Many residents are distressed at the prospect of having a marijuana or pot store across the street from us. The reason they are distressed is because we have a limited commercial area there that's on the ground floor of townhouses, and there are two floors above. Those people who live fronting this proposed establishment have their balconies there, the only personal space they have for outdoor living. Some of them actually are directly across from the proposed site. Therefore, their use of their balconies would be inhibited because of the fact that the store, to our understanding, is proposed to be open until 10 o'clock at night, and that there will be people coming and going, obviously, to use the facilities, we presume, if it's successful. We ask that you not use this as an economic development plan, a way to make money for the city, but instead recognize our unique situation in that we made a substantial investment. Many of us would not have made that investment in living in Harbor Square had we known that there was going to be a pot store across the street. This has nothing to do with whether marijuana is legal or not legal. It has to do with the fact that children assemble to go to school immediately across the street from the proposed site. I believe from my past experience in California that may well be considered to be part of the school process. And I know that a marijuana store cannot be 1,000 feet from where children are going to school. And if they're assembling for the bus, I believe there's an easement kind of thing going on in that regard. And certainly the school is in loco parentis for that, for the students. There's a study been done by JAMA Pediatrics that says that children between 6th and 8th grade have begun to use pot because of the fact that the stigma has been taken away with the legalization. Once again, that stigma would be gone if they're assembling across the street from the location. Our neighborhood is a residential neighborhood, and as was just stated, it expands beyond Harbor Square. So for those reasons, we ask, as you explore this, that you not make it a simple look at the Washington Code, but instead take time to evaluate the impact on our lives, and it will have that impact. Thank you, sir. We ask that if the Planning Commission is going to consider us, that they have meetings at Harbor Square and get our input. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Dan Reisfeld, 4625 Rockaway Bluff. I've commented on this also before at the South Ward meeting. This is not just simply an amendment of the 1,000-foot setback. If you make this amendment, it will apply to the entire island. As presently, this
area is not zoned for a marijuana store. So, and as pointed out by Mr. Garlando, it is not also zoned retail. So you have to make three changes to the code to basically allow this to occur. This is a family-oriented island. I have no problem with the cannabis store. I have no problem where it is currently located. But this is not an appropriate place for a cannabis store. We do not want front and center, the first thing that people see getting off the ferry is a cannabis store. I do not believe that this is appropriate. And furthermore, as I mentioned, if you amend this 1,000-foot setback limit, it will apply throughout the entire island. You cannot discriminate based upon one location, which means that there will be applications for cannabis stores in other locations on the island, closer to transit centers, schools, and other types of places that we do not want this to be. It is equivalent to putting a liquor store or any other type of business that caters to a certain type of contingent, which is fine. There is a time and a place for this. This is not the appropriate place. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Yetta Hammer, and I don't live across the street, but I live on the north end of the island. And I do not believe that all things changed for the better. I think we sometimes have to be wise about what we do and what we allow. There are so incredibly many temptations out there for our youth. I've had my children went to school here, my grandchildren now do. And when I heard about this, I just was really flabbergasted that it would even be considered. On the lighter side, Ken and I had been driving for 13 hours. We came on the ferry. We got off at the police station. There was a police car sitting there. And then there was this sign with an arrow pointing to the right that said, wine and liquor tasting. Well, we burst into laughter. Are you now going to have an outlet for marijuana there too? Should they stop in at the police station to have a breathalyzer test before they leave? This is so, as we used to say when I was young, this is absolutely upside down. I cannot understand how you would want this anywhere in Winslow. It would be a very negative thing for Winslow.
Yep. Anyone else?
My name is Peter Bryan. I live at 12089 Miller Road. And I appreciate you guys staying up so late for us. There seems to be a lot of misinformation. First, the zoning, we're not looking at reducing buffers on schools, playgrounds, anything with children. The state will not allow that. There's been a lot of talk this evening about Waypoint Park. We're looking at reducing that buffer as well as the Howley Cove trail buffer. And then moving it from rezoning from light industrial, which is the only place it can be on the island, is in the Day Park Road business park. And so we're just saying retail core. And as far as everyone applying for licenses on the island, the state is only allowing one shop on the island, period. We got a priority one status because we were able to fill out a tremendous amount of criteria, having history in the medical community as well as in retail. And so there wouldn't be more. We've chosen this area because we feel that after coming to a lot of these meetings and listening to the comprehensive plan and the impact of 305 and people being shuttled back and forth from the current shop, from the ferry, that's, you know, a lot of traffic. If they're at the shop for 20 minutes, then they're coming right back to the boat. So every few minutes you have these, you know, taxis or vehicles impacting 305. We think that a lot of the tourists would be able to Have that novelty, that experience, walking off the boat, being able to stop by the shop. As far as, people having all this smoke go in their houses, one, you can't smoke outside, that's illegal. So we're assuming everyone's gonna be doing illegal activities while the police right next door watch, which I think that's kind of crazy. Obviously, I'm pro, but I don't think that it's going to have this negative impact on Harbor Square. Currently, there's at least 4 spaces that are empty, and they're totally vacant. They have a need for industry, a need for business there. This will help other businesses by driving traffic to the right when they're coming off the boat instead of straight into Winslow. And as far as the school bus stop, that doesn't affect any of the coding. And the transport hub does not count either. Oddly enough, we found out that the state does not consider airports or ferries transportation hubs. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I don't know if you can see me over this podium because I'm so small, so I'm going to step to the side. Speaking as I'm at 107 Harbor Square Loop. I live right above the bike shop.
Your name, please?
Sunmi Yorda.
Thank
you. Good evening. So I live at 107, right above the bike shop. And when I purchased that piece of property, I purchased it for a specific purpose. I understood that for the convenience of having easy access to the city and the ferry, that I was going to have to deal with the traffic during the rush hour, and that there were going to be some inconveniences. And I understood all that. However, I did go downstairs to the bike shop to confirm with them about the noise level and the privacy, and they close at like 5-6 o'clock. I have no issues, and they have no problems with anybody upstairs. I checked with the businesses across, and they were office businesses. I knew what their hours were, and I knew what my privacy was. And like I said, my balcony is right there. And as a mother of 3 children, 2 that are in college and 1 that has graduated in 2015, I checked with all 3 of my children. Is this a generational thing? I understand this is legal. I'm not debating whether it's legal. I'm not debating whether it should be on island. But the question is, when I purchased my property, I did my studies, I checked. And this goes contrary. A shop like that opening across the street at whatever hours, you cannot guarantee that everybody's going to be law-abiding. You can't say that, this is the law and everybody will do this or will not do that. But beyond that, I checked with my kids and I said, how do you feel about this? You're in your 20s, they are gonna be 21, 22, 25. None of them want it outside of their house. They don't want it in front of their house. So essentially, my question, I guess, is, what are my rights? What about the fact that, I did my studies and I did everything, and so suddenly, are you going to be able to come and just tell me, well, you know what? Times are changing. We can amend. This is what we're going to do. And you're just going to, under that theory, our property value will plummet because there will be no guarantees. It is a residential area as far as we are concerned, and I just ask that you respect that and take that into consideration. Not against having it on island and not against establishment, just a little more discretion as to where we are going to place these shops and these stores. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would just like to make one comment about it, because there was illegal drug sales behind my property when I first moved there. And what you need to be concerned about is, do you want the image of your own policeman going in and out of these kinds of things and participating in it? And I know that was a problem in the past.
Anyone else? Hearing no further public comment, further council discussion. Go ahead.
I'll just add that to one of the comments of another council member earlier on. When I say that I'm supportive of the city looking into this, I don't mean looking into whether a cannabis store makes sense in that spot. That's not the point. The point would just be looking into changing the buffers on the island and allowing other spaces on the island where a cannabis shop could be. Most of the issues that you've been brought up, and I thank you all for being here to bring them up, relate to that space being an office space now and being used for a retail purpose, and that would be a large change, and I get that. And so I'm not suggesting we should change that. I just want to be clear about what I was suggesting. Just suggesting that I don't have any problem with looking at whether we've been too restrictive on the placement of cannabis shops on the island.
Any other comment? I mainly for the reason Sarah mentioned, am against pursuing this any further at this time. I just don't think we need to spend our resources on this. I would mention that when we get into the Island Center sub area planning process, that there have been suggestions made that there's area in Island Center that may be an appropriate area for further expansion, and I think that's a discussion that could happen at that time and might result in something, but I'm against doing anything now. I'd like to know what the consensus is one way or another. Maybe there's not a consensus, but does anybody want to move to ask the planning department to work on this further? And I think that it's a dead issue for now. Is there anything for the good of the order? Hearing nothing, then we're adjourned.